Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. We are writers over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. We write a lot more than we podcast, but we try to do this twice a week. So if you're new, welcome. Our standard post-game recap format is it's actually a 247 to go with our company name. We do two game balls, four lasting thoughts, maybe some opinions, and then we answer seven questions. And of course, you can always tweet the questions at me or message me, find a way to get those across, and we'll try to answer them. We only answer seven. So, but that said, if you have a question, usually we're able to get to it either in the question or maybe in our takeaways. But Steve, first we can start with the game ball. I will let you go first. Lots of defensive standouts. Who really impressed you the most?
I mean, I got it for the second week in a row. Can I take Quiddy Pay? Matched up a lot of the game against. I don't know if he rotate back and forth. I mean, I know he beat Werfs on at least two of the sacks. I think that he had. An All-American candidate. Really, you could argue, you know, as long as Alaric Jackson appeared to be fully healthy, I think he played the entire game, that Iowa's tackles are the best offensive tackle duo that Michigan will face probably the rest of the season, at least in my opinion.
I think so, yeah.
Between Werfs and Jackson. So to see Quiddy come out on fire against, maybe the best player that he'll go against one-on-one on the schedule it's really encouraging. You know, that was the biggest difference I thought for Michigan yesterday was what they were able to do up front defensively. They looked night and day to what they've looked like all season, and it was one of the better offensive fronts that they'll face, particularly on the outside. So I'm going to go with Quiddy Pay. I think he kind of set the tone with some really good play early, and the defense, I think, kind of fed off of that, built off of it.
Yeah, for mine, I mean, obviously could probably pick a lot of different people on the defense. Eight sacks, 12 tackles for loss, three interceptions, even a forced fumble. I'm going to go with just a little bit more of the eye test impression, Cam McGrone. Now, granted, he had good stats. He had a sack and a half and six tackles. And we talked about before in our preview podcast, I mentioned, you know, there's a Josh Uche, there's some of these freak athletes, Cam McGrone, and it's encouraging if you're a Michigan fan that they're in on these plays and that they are showcasing some speed and able to get by guys. But what matters most is delivering. And we talked about it last week that, or maybe we might have said this off, you know, not on the show, but has there ever been a more hyped player with one tackle than Cam McGrone? I mean, the excitement was there because of that speed and because of that playmaking ability. I think you really started to see it. And I think he adds, you know, don't want to do any comparisons to the All-American they had last year, but I think he gives them a little bit of that extra, the extra element of playmaking on defense. And when I was in Madison and watching the team, I'm thinking, well, they can't go sign anybody and they can't go trade anybody. So where are they going to find someone? And granted, McGrone did play against Wisconsin, but where are they going to find someone who can make some of these plays? And, thinking about Ohio State, for example, who's gonna be able to stop Dobbins in the backfield? You know, if he's going in the flats or a variety of plays, or Justin Fields or any mobile quarterback that they're going to face, or even Maryland and Indiana have some playmakers. So where do they get this? And I think McGrone really raises the defense's ceiling a considerable amount. So he gets my game ball, but again, I think Ambry Thomas has a nice claim to it. I think Jordan Glasgow, another two sacks. For all the people that didn't like how he played against Rutgers, you know, he came through. He also had nine total tackles, so lots of names. But I think McGrone and Pay stood out the most to me as well. So four lasting thoughts, Steve. It's been just over 24 hours since the game ended. What is sticking out the most to you about the game and some of the key storylines?
I mean, yeah, I guess we'll go offense. The biggest thing for me in watching this team offensively right now, and I think it's probably the thing that concerns me the most going forward, is we're, what, 5 games in now? I have no clue what their offensive identity is. There mm-hmm. doesn't look to be any bread and butter, any, you know, kind of back to the well type plays that this offense is running consistently that make me feel like that there's a foundation, that there's even a foundation to build off of going forward. Everything just seems so hodgepodge, piecemeal. If I'm a Michigan fan, I think that's what's concerning me most about the offense. When you have to say it when you talk about this unit, when they return 9 starters and multiple all Big Ten capable players, both up front, at receiver, at quarterback. Very concerning when you don't, there just doesn't even look like there's an identity there offensively right now. Iowa, good defense, but in my opinion, not a great defense, right? And they made Iowa look like a great defense yesterday. And so as great as the defense looked, I think what's encouraging about the defense is that they're going to continue to get even better. That's a unit you can see right now is coming into their own. Because there are, like you talk about McGrone, Daxon Hill made that pass breakup, led to an interception yesterday. It's a young, uber-talented, athletic group that's getting better and better. Offensively, though, you have a veteran, you know, what I would consider uber-talented as well, just continues to underwhelm across the board. And I don't know what the identity is, and I think, you know, that's a major, major concern. You know, Rutgers clearly looks more and more like the outlier. You see what Maryland did to Rutgers yesterday. You know, mm-hmm. it is, you know, and that's, I think we weren't shocked necessarily, but again, to see Michigan perform as poorly as they did offensively, it has to be the main point. If you're not talking about how awesome the defense played, the main point has to be right. That the offense just continues to underwhelm, like, heavily, in my opinion.
Fun glass half full, glass half empty deal is asking Michigan fans what they thought of the game, because, and I'll take the other side. And I think you're absolutely right, though. The offense, it has been very, I mean, I don't know, against the 3 teams they've played this year that are solid, Army, Iowa, and Wisconsin, they have 38 regulation points in 12 quarters. That is not successful. I mean, Ohio State scored almost 38 points against what many believe to be a top 5 defense in Michigan State. And so it's, you know, I'll table some of the offensive talk, because we have a lot of questions about the offense, understandably so. But I guess one thing that's sticking out to me on the other side that isn't about the offense is that I really think the defense found some nastiness. You know, we talked about it with the game ball players, but it just seemed like the confidence was high. And I sat next to Iowa beat writer David Eicholt during the game, and it was just, you know, I was remarking to him, because he was mentioning Iowa's offensive line. Just he was surprised at what it was doing, and I think some of it is Iowa has, you know, some new pieces on the interior part of the line. And, you know, Nate Stanley has not looked comfortable on the road in past games. But I just feel like there was a little bit more of a, it's an overused word in the sports world, but a little bit of the swag. I felt like the defense kind of found its footing. Quiddy Pay is, I mean, keep an eye on him. He might end up on, maybe not All-American lists, but is it infeasible? I mean, he's putting up numbers. He's producing, as you mentioned, against a guy many people think will be a top 50 draft pick, whether it was Wirfs or Jackson. It didn't matter which side he was on. He was facing a highly regarded O-lineman. And you're seeing Aiden Hutchinson, Ambry Thomas, a lot of these new players, Cam McGrone. They're mixing in really, really well with some of the veterans, Khalik Hudson, Jordan Glasgow. I don't think we ever said the defense was going to be bad this year. If we did, you know, I don't remember it. But they are exceeding expectations, and I think they're getting actively better each week. I mean, quite, you know, suddenly you think about that Penn State game, and maybe before the season you were thinking it might be of a shootout variety. You know, this is good news and bad news for Michigan, but I think other than Ohio State, I think they can really handle a lot of these offenses that they're going to face the rest of the way. Because I think there's just that edge again. You know, 8 sacks. I don't have the stat in front of me, but I'm curious the last time that they had that kind of hitting home havoc. Because it's one thing to create pressure. It's another, you know, it's one thing to make the quarterback uncomfortable. It's another thing to just make his life miserable. And so I think there's a little bit of nastiness. Steve, what's another thing that's sticking out in your brain right now?
I go back to a little bit about what we talked about last week, is, and it kind of wraps back into McGrone and Hill again, but seeing the young player that it continues to be, the process is starting to work out for some of these younger players. And another reason why I agree with you as far as, you know, that I think this defense now feels like it can match up with anybody going forward. I think one of the things too that I look back at one of the preseason predictions I made, I think caught a little bit of guff, and I feel pretty good about it now after how they played on Saturday, was that I didn't think that Michigan would miss or lose as much on the edge as fans thought that they would. You know, you got Rashawn Gary, Chase Winovich leaving. We talked about Pay, Uche, Mike Dana. You know, what a performance from him yesterday after Pay went down with the injury. I thought he played an excellent, his best ball game. And then I guess maybe to tie it in, the interior line. I thought those guys played their best. Maybe Kemp probably played his best game in a Michigan uniform yesterday. Michael Dwumfor was awesome.
Oh yeah.
A lot of plays where the cut lane was stemmed off, you know, the forced Iowa's back to the inside, back into the teeth of the defense. And I know we talked about, you know, the interior of Iowa's line, probably, you know, the strength is definitely on the outside. But again, this is still a top 15 team. Iowa significantly limited in being able to run the ball, especially compared to how they had done throughout the season heading into this game. So, you know, I guess, I don't know, that was a really kind of rambled thought about young players and then turning it into the defensive line. But I really liked what we saw about the defensive line. And it goes to show, you know, that last week the big thing was about Hinton and Smith, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It was way more important to continue to get Dwumfor and Kemp as many reps as possible. And I think you're starting to see the benefit of that, you know, in what, the second best team they played all season, that they dominated up front, you know, and I think that's a really encouraging sign for them going forward. You know, we got Penn State in a couple weeks and past that, so.
Yeah, you did call your shot on Dwumfor.
It was big. He's
and how it was important.
Yeah,
to play.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's their best interior lineman when he's healthy. He was not healthy. So, you know, like I said, it's the big name freshman is a lot very similar to the backup quarterback deal, you know, where, well, how could it be, you know, and they knew what they were doing with that. When those guys are ready to play, they're going to play. They're hugely important to the future of the program, but the future, you know, they can't, you don't rush it. And a guy like Dwumfor, like I said, way, way, way more important to the now, which is what this is all about for them. You know, all their goals are still in front of them. It's like people, I think, still kind of fail to realize that sometimes when they're talking about the team, because the offense is struggling so bad, that I don't think people realize, like, every one of their goals is still in front of them. I mean, their schedule is rigorous enough to where, and I'm not even coming close to predicting that they'd run the table, but if by chance that they were able to, their resume is going to be one of the best in the country. So it's really about getting the guys that you need now. And Dwumfor was at the top of that list, you know. And yeah, I mean, seeing him 100% on Saturday, utterly dominant at points, I thought, in on some certain drives. And then, like I said, Kemp, the same thing, blowing Iowa off the line in the middle, really negated anything they wanted to do running the football. So, yeah, so, yep.
Okay, well, and now I'll take my shot at the offense, so to speak. It's, you know, you mentioned the process is starting to work. I didn't hear a lot of offensive players mentioned in that process that you discussed. And to me, I think my take would be that the offense needs outliers if Michigan wants to have a chance this season. They need players. They need new players or players who have been around to have surges like Kwity Paye and surges like Cam Regrone and come out of nowhere and or make strides from what you expected. Maybe like an Ambry Thomas or you know, an Aiden Hutchinson. I mean, they need breakout players really badly because, you know, I'm sure I've seen the questions. A lot of people want to pin it on the quarterback, and there's certainly a lot to be desired at quarterback, but that's not Michigan's main problem. I think there's a serious execution issue across the board. I did feel like the offensive line stepped up. I mean, if you think about AJ Epenesa, I mean, Iowa's defense is probably used to doing what Michigan's defense did yesterday, if that makes sense. And so, and there were times where they had to get the ball out quicker. They had to, you know, Shea had to go on the run to avoid a sack. But at the same time, did feel like that was maybe a step forward. But I don't know. It just seems like that. You know, the talk about the playmakers, in theory, it shouldn't matter about the scheme or things like that. I mean, this should be an offense that with so many veterans, with so many talented players, so many players who we have been given the impression are future pros. I mean, I'm not an official scout. I don't know what their future holds. But, you know, my understanding is that they have three receivers who could go to the NFL. You know, they have a running back in Charbonnet who is obviously a couple years away from that discussion, but seems to be of that track. Shea Patterson, one time was thought to be a one and done. You know, I think at tight end, now granted there's some injuries there, but you know, it's interesting because I think I go back to what John Beilein did a couple years ago where he said, you know, the team is good. It will win a bunch of games and be all right, but to win a title or to meet all of the goals, it needs outliers. They need players to emerge, and I don't know if it's freshmen, right? We talked about the process. I don't know if it's redshirt freshmen. Maybe it's a third-year starter, but yeah, just really across the board, I'm trying to think who has been Michigan's best offensive player so far, and it's a you know, I think you could make a case for Nico Collins, but and then I don't, you know, maybe there's an offensive line stat that helps bear that out, but it's tough sledding. And I don't, you know, as I mentioned, they'll be in a lot of games because of the defense. If they want to win those games, they need, you know, who has a legacy that gets defined this year? Who has a signature moment? Because on defense, you know, you saw a bunch of that yesterday. Offense, well, the numbers speak for themselves. Anyway, let's pop open some questions here. Let's start with Shane Majewski, frequent question asker, friend of the pod, as they say. He says, are you buying what Harbaugh said about the offense hitting their stride? To me, it looks like they're throwing stuff against the wall and seeing if it sticks. So I think maybe it's worth going back and looking and seeing, did they throw stuff against the wall? No, I'm not buying him saying that. I think Harbaugh has a habit of keeping things. He's not going to put on negative things on the record. He's not going to stir up controversy. He's not going to call people out because he can do that on his own in Schembechler Hall 7 days a week. You know, if he doesn't like what Gattis called or he doesn't like how Shea played or he didn't like how you know, someone's giving the effort someone is giving, he can say that. He can call it out without it being public. So to me, that was him almost, maybe not trolling, but kind of sort of trolling the fans by not giving them an answer that would satisfy them and saying, well, too bad, guys. And I don't know, Steve, what do you think about hitting stride? Because one thing, I went and reread the quote, and he did mention, you know, they're avoiding the costly mistakes they had at the beginning of the season. 10 points is not going to cut it. But if there is one area where I think they're progressing, I think it is in avoiding mistakes, not just turnovers, mental mistakes and blown assignments or you know, misrun routes, things like that. So maybe he's talking about that. I just assumed he was, I didn't take even 1 ounce of what he said with that genuinely. I think that was him proving that he can handle it without making it a public thing. Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I lean more towards what you're saying. I think that last thing that you, the last part you just said about handling it inside, I think, you know, create as little a distraction as you can out on the outside for the players to deal with. I mean, yeah, it's really hard to agree with him saying that they're hitting their stride or on their way to hitting their stride, because that goes back to like my first point is you watch yesterday's game and I barely see anything. Guess you could argue they ran the ball a little bit better in between the tackles yesterday than they have in some prior games, but even then I think we're reaching a little bit. I don't see that foundation, like I said, and that's what I keep going back to. And I feel like if they were on their way to hitting the stride, we would be seeing more evidence of something that, like, you mm-hmm. know what I, you got right. People out there who watch football probably understand what I'm trying to say. There's nothing you can count on right now for them offensively. I mean, there are things that we think that they should be able to count on. Like, you know, like, again, I think the people say about throwing the ball up to Nico Collins. I mean, yeah, a quarter of their offensive output was on that one play? Maybe even more than a quarter? How many total yards they end up with yesterday? A little over 200? Was it even 200?
It was 267,
oh, okay.
But a third of their passing yards. They only threw for 147
okay.
passing
so,
yards.
Yeah, so 33% of your passing yards are on one play to one player doing the one thing that people have been clamoring for them to do more consistently. And then we never saw it again the rest of the game. You know, and you didn't get the impression that Iowa was playing deep, you know, like throughout the game. You know, so it's like, it's hard for me to believe, you know, what he's saying in that regard. At the same time, though, you talk about him trolling. I actually think he gives such little crap about what the media and the fans think that he's the type of guy that is not saying that he'd come out and said that we're not hitting our stride, we're you know, not doing well. I also don't think he would say that for no reason either. But again, I mean, at the same time, we've watched this offense now for 5 games, and there's just been, to me, there's nothing that suggests that they're on their way to hitting their stride. It does. It just looks like a hodgepodge, just almost a mess, you know, without sounding too critical. But that actually hit the question about throwing the stuff against the wall and seeing if it sticks. That's kind of the feeling I got watching mm-hmm. the game a little bit, is that, you know, like the Peoples Jones pass, like just stuff like it's like, you know, I don't know, just that was executed. It's, you see plays like that are executed so poorly that just make you think if, like, you know, where this is going to come from eventually, you know, because that was executed so horribly on a play that may have worked if it had been executed properly, but it was executed so badly that it was never going to work. you know. And so I actually think this, the throwing the stuff against the wall and seeing if it sticks is not a bad opinion or not a bad metaphor, I guess, for what we're seeing from them offensively right now.
Yeah, I could get on board with it. Yeah, that's where I'm saying if I'm watching, I might try to see how many things they do. By the way, I just want to say regarding the Peoples-Jones throw play, if memory serves, I believe the receiver fell. And then actually David Eichholt pointed out to me that Iowa State did the exact same play, like literally the exact same play, and it went for a 71-yard touchdown because they have a freshman cornerback, DJ Johnson, and they were trying to see if he could bite and try to get Peoples-Jones. And so, I mean, you can disagree with the play call and the execution, but I do see why they were tempted to try it, because if they can get him to bite, you know, that could be the game-breaking play. But
well,
anyway,
my point, can I just say, my point with that, though, is not even that it, I'm not even saying that it wasn't a good play call. Can be a good play call, but if it's executed horribly, it may not have been coached well enough to make it a good play call. Does that make sense? Like, it might have been the right strategic play, but you know what, three guys missed their block. I mean, I don't remember if Peoples-Jones slipped or not, but two or three guys completely whiffed on their blocks. I mean, it was it just looked so sloppy that in theory it looked like it could have been a good play if it had been executed properly, but it was executed so horribly that just didn't look, they didn't even look ready to execute it. You know, so I don't know, whatever.
Right. Jared Schmidt says, has the offense been more horizontal because of Shea or Gattis? It's hard to see the full play on TV and can't tell if there are deeper routes being called. So Jared, like all of the, is it blank or blank? It's almost always a little bit of both, somewhere in the middle. I'm thinking it's a little bit more Shea because I do see them run deep routes. I don't know if they're effective deep routes. So that's where it could be on Gattis are they genuinely giving Patterson and the Michigan offense a chance to complete a deep pass? But I feel like Shea, when he's moving or when there's pressure coming, and this is smart, it's not stupid to try to get rid of the ball, especially if a guy's open or if you have guys who can make plays. You know, I think Ronnie Bell is you know, a perfect example of, well, maybe he's your one read guy. You know, if all of a sudden you don't have time to execute the play you wanted to execute, find him, get the ball to him, because odds are that he'll be open. So I think it's a little bit more Shea. I don't know if that's coached. I don't know if that's habitual. I don't know if that's, you know, sometimes quarterbacks, after they get hit a couple times, they don't want to get hit again. And so they change how they play the position. But seems like it's more Patterson to me, because there are players who are running deep. I'd have to really get an all 22 and really break it down to know if they were open on X play and, or you know, if they were running a route downfield to create space or to actually get open, things like that. You know, he's not going to find every open receiver. No quarterback does. You know, not even in the NFL. But it seems like there's a little bit more of a, uh-oh, let's get rid of the ball mentality, which, you know, for some quarterbacks that works. But as we've mentioned, I think it makes a lot of sense to try to find someone like Nico Collins downfield. Steve, anything to add there?
No, that was the thing. It's like I only get the same view. I'm usually a TV, so I don't get that view. So that's, you know, that's one of the things I always try to find the right rewatch to see if you can get more of an idea of that. So I figured that's more your.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Side of things, I mean, my thing with Patterson is, you know, there was the one drive, you know, where he looked like he was in a little bit of a rhythm. And it's clear that he is a rhythm-based quarterback, for better, for better, for worse. And you know, I'd have to maybe go back and watch, let's say, like the first two offensive drives of each game. But outside of Middle Tennessee State, I never really have gotten the sense that Michigan, I think, has done enough to maybe get him into a rhythm with the play calling. I'm kind of the belief Michigan should go pass heavy to begin games and try to get him warm and get him into that mode, because
they kind of have.
No, that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering. I want to go back and you know, I just, and also the other thing too is to design more stuff outside of the pocket. I feel like they did that against Rutgers. I'm trying to recall. There was a little bit of that yesterday, right? But I'm just not. I don't know. It's weird. I'm just not sure that they're also playing to his strengths. But he is, yeah, far from being without fault. Far from it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just there's too much of the happy feet still, and you know, it was like you saw them on the actually one of the most interesting plays of the game to me was the third down, the Michigan's last possession of the game, on third down where they ran him around the edge. He looked quick. He looked totally healthy enough to run the football, yet was that what? Only his second design carry of the entire game, right? I mean, he kept once on the read, mm-hmm. you know, and I just thought that was like, to see him come around the edge quick, physical, and I'm, you know, it's like, where's that been? Because, you know, that's, we talk about going back to last year, it was against Wisconsin, where the entire outlook for their offense changed in that game when he kept that ball and took it like 65, 70 yards. We still have not seen that on a nearly consistent enough basis to open anything up for anybody else. So that's, you know, again, and so what I'm getting at is he looked totally capable and healthy, you know, enough to be running the football more consistently. And I don't know if it's, that's where that who is it? You know, is it the quarterback not keeping, or is it the play calling? And that's where that's kind of the catch 22 for me. So.
Yep. Next question. Why no throw Nico? Well put, Dave Turns. But you know, it's a fair question. I know there's someone on our board who did the post about how Iowa played. That is not a secondary that should be able to shut down or dictate what Michigan does. I do think there's an element of, and I know Harbaugh said he didn't do this, but I think there is an element of maybe they tell Shea no risky throws, no 50-50 balls today. I don't know why you would, you know, I don't know why you'd want to change your identity, but at the same time, as you said, maybe they don't have an identity yet. I think part of it is that he is not a short route, get open kind of receiver. He is more of the big play downfield guy. But yeah, good question. I don't have a great answer other than what we mentioned about the happy feet and then the scheme, some of the things we said there, and then maybe Collins' size and not lack of speed, because he's still quite fast, but relative lack of speed compared to other receivers. Steve, anything to add?
No, I agree. The big thing there too is, yeah, I mean, Iowa secondary is one that you should be taking chances on. Well, they, like we said, the time that they did, it worked out. You know, mm-hmm. and what's his name? Stone played a really good game for Iowa yesterday. Really good football player.
He did.
Yeah, he looked like a really good player, but you know, not enough of that type of stuff. You know, and I think Collins is a guy that maybe that benefits the least, along with Peoples Jones, as far as nothing. Is it too conservative? I mean, it's hard to believe that we'd even be saying that about an offense that has so many players that feel like they have explosive potential. But I mean, they're not throwing the ball enough to a few guys, you know, in my opinion. So.
Mm-hmm. Next question. Oh, here we go. Let's unpack it. Travis Paluski says, at what point do the coaches decide it's time to go with Dylan or Joe at QB At this point, they'd have 2 weeks before PSU Notre Dame, then Maryland, and a bye. And so it kind of reminds me of 2017. Now, I think Shea is much, much better than John O'Korn was. And so I don't think you necessarily... I'm not advocating for them to make the switch. This is a situation where I'm under the... I don't think that there has been an obvious on-field, in-game scenario where I think the backups have been better than Shea. But if you think that... If you're Michigan and you don't think that you have what you can have out of Shea, and you think you can... You think Dylan McCaffrey... I don't think Milton. I don't think at any point Milton is in the starting conversation. But if you... If you think Dylan McCaffrey gives you a better chance to beat Ohio State, then I do think the sooner the better, technically. And I think a game against Illinois as opposed to on the road against Penn State or at home against Notre Dame, you got to do Illinois. Or, as Travis mentions, the bye week in Maryland before the Michigan State game. That said, I don't anticipate it happening. Just hard for me. We do this quite a bit where the backup is pitched as automatically better because the fans are unhappy with the starter. You don't think Jim Harbaugh wants to win a Big Ten title? Like, if he thought Dylan McCaffrey was better, now granted the concussion thing, you know, who knows? Maybe who knows if that game finishes differently and McCaffrey looks good. Maybe that was his chance and it's just unfortunate. But, I mean, he spent how many hours evaluating the two all winter, spring, and summer and in August? I mean, they almost lost to Army. And they stuck with Shea. I mean, at some point in that game, now McCaffrey played a couple snaps, but I don't know why this is so constant, but if you do think Dylan's better, I think it does have to be this week. If you think Shea Patterson's better, you just got to ride it out. I mean, not everyone wins a Big Ten title. You give it your best shot, and if you just don't have the quarterback, you just don't have the try your best with the quarterback that you have. I don't know. I mean, there have been imperfect teams have won the Big Ten. And I don't know if necessarily just keep reopening, keep trying a new starter. Because I don't know. Steve, any thoughts to add here on regarding, you know, when you might make the switch or if you should make the switch? I'm thinking no on the switch, but maybe that's just me.
That's one thing where in people... can't kind of face the fact or face the truth in a situation like that. That's a situation where you have to trust the head coach that he's making the right decision. Because, yeah, there's no way they're not going to hang on to Patterson as the starter if he really isn't the best option for the team. I'm sorry. It's different than not playing a second-year linebacker right off of the get-go, who, by the way, you know, we talk about McGrone played really well, especially in the second half, but again, he did what we had talked about before, very inconsistent. He made a couple huge mistakes in the first half and played a much better second half. You know, so what I'm getting at is that's as far as like roster management, depth chart type stuff, I'm always going to side with what the head coach believes, because like you said, you know, we see nothing compared to what they see. One, we see nothing compared to what they see. And two, it's never going to be a deal where the best guy isn't, that they're not putting the best guy out there. You know, if anything, how you'd handle it is if that's up in the air, let's say, who the best, you know, if it's close, then you maybe sneak a guy in for a series or two, or the leash just becomes shorter. But as far as like Saturday goes, I'll be utterly shocked if it's not Shea Patterson, you know, taking the snaps, at least to begin the game, right? So, you know,
make a shorter leash, absolutely.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Is like, yeah. But that's you know, it's I have to side with the coaches and Harbaugh in a situation like that. I actually kind of think it's absurd to think otherwise, you know, because you're effectively saying that if the coaches don't make a change or haven't made a change, that they're actively like making the team worse, to, you know, that they're not doing their best to try to put the best product out on the field. You know, and so I'd say this, though. The one thing I would say, though, in defense of people who are clamoring for a quarterback change or whatever, we, you know, have hyped up that quarterback room quite a bit. In my opinion, rightfully so, still. I mean, this is the first they have really three guys. I wouldn't count Patterson necessarily because he wasn't originally recruited by the staff, but with McCaffrey and Milton, you had two guys who I would argue were the number one targets. Milton, maybe a couple other guys in 18 they really liked, but, you know, Milton was Pep Hamilton's number one guy. You know, one entering their third year in McCaffrey and Milton in his second year, and you have a returning starter who, like we've said it before, had one of the best, most efficient seasons a Michigan quarterback's ever had last year. So the fact that the position is underwhelming at this point, combined, I think, with the fact that, like I said, I think we went a long ways to say that this is probably the best quarterback room in the Big Ten. I know that's a statement I've made in the preseason, at least 1 through 3. You know, that it hasn't even come close to living up to that. People would naturally wonder, well, if the quarterback room is as good as you guys said it was, how on earth is the second guy in line not good enough to make the offense better than what it's been so far? So I can see it from that angle. But like I said, I think the overwhelming thought for me is that I think that you know, depth chart wise and how they handle the quarterback position is something that you have to trust that the coaches are keeping the right guy in there or playing the right player at the position, because they'd be putting too much at risk to not put the best guy out there. So, you know, I don't know. That's my thought on it, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes quarterbacks do get worse. That is one position where that can happen. And as you mentioned, there is talent. But, you know, Michigan fans have been calling for the next quarterback for 8 years. I mean, I still remember when it was put in Gardner, put in Morris, you know, put in Spate, put in O'Corn, put in, I mean, it's just been going on and ongoing. And so I think that J-Tog asked a funny question. I know this, we'll just continue the discussion, but he says, when do fans start calling for Cade McNamara? You know, cause right. As soon as they put McCaffrey or Milton in there, and that's what it comes down to, is as soon as you put one of those guys in there, well, then they're going to say, well, the next guy must be better. And so, as you point out, I mean, logically speaking, would you rather ask the what you see with your eyes or what the coaches have been studying for 9 months? And so I think the one thing that you do, well, one thing to keep in mind is that if you make the change, don't expect to, you know, have a heroic comeback from Shea Patterson later on in the season. I mean, he's a senior. If you bench him, you're basically saying, we're not going back. And so that's why I don't think they're going to change the starter, but they might keep him on a shorter leash, because the other question is he at his best? What is Shea Patterson capable of next week, and what does that look like? And if he doesn't show it, then I think you sit him down, you know, after the game gets started, and then keep evaluating, keep saying, well, how does Michigan get the best that it possibly can out of the quarterback position? Is it mental? Is it physical? Is someone ascending? I don't think this is more of a McCaffrey conversation than a Milton conversation, but both of those players are going to keep progressing or should continue to keep progressing. So I get where the fans get frustrated, because you basically want to keep trying different quarterbacks until someone works. But I do think there is an element. I mean, the coaches don't always know with everything, but this is a situation where And honestly, even the stuff we've seen on the field, and Steve, maybe you can help me out here. McCaffrey has looked, I'd say he's looked solid. He has not looked like he offers significantly better, you know, passing ability than Shea. Maybe I'm wrong there.
No, I agree. That's kind of the other thing. And again, you know, with the Milton talk and like going back to myself, have been one of his biggest proponents. A lot of that based on how excited I know Michigan was to get him when they got him. He's got a lot of potential, but you know, Rutgers. We saw, again, like I said, you go back, you watch what Maryland did to Rutgers yesterday. Rutgers just stinks. I don't think we can really take anything out of what Milton did outside of the fact that he's got an incredibly live arm. And, you know, with that, I think he brings a lot of potential. But he was never a guy I think was going to be a one or first year or second year guy. He was going to take some time. And I don't think making a really nice throw to Giles Jackson against Rutgers in garbage time should put him in the conversation at this point.
Next question. This one came from two people. Wolverine State said if the season ended today, would Gattis be fired? Terry Boatwright said, do you see at the rate of the offense Gattis only staying 1 year? I don't know about the season ending today. Hard to tell. Because it really does come down to what they do against Michigan State, Notre Dame, and Michigan. They have to, you know, can't be 6-6, but I don't know if they said the team went 4-1 this year. I don't know. Hard to tell. But for Terry's framing of the question, at the rate of the offense is going, I don't know. I don't really like to get into any sort of hot seat discussions until there's actually some semblance of evidence that it's going to happen, but certainly is not delivering. The offense does not rank well in any category. I mean, you know, and it's worse than last season. And I think that's where things are. That's probably the most glaring thing, is how on earth does the offense get worse?
I mean, they still Zach, have time. not worse. I mean, significantly. Like that's the thing we keep going back to about last year. Statistically, anyway, the offense was not that bad. Like, it was a solid unit, and that's where I think...
It was like the 35th best offense aggregate. Right. If you look at the different computer sites, yeah.
Not great, but I mean, what are they right now? In the 80s or 90s?
So, SP Plus, Bill Connolly does a great job. I think he has them at 66th.
Wow, that's higher than I would have even thought, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but yeah, that's just one, right? I mean, they rank poorly in statistics, but if you count for who they've played and maybe the non-garbage time thing, you know, it gets a little bit more analytics. But still, 66th, I think it'd be hard for Michigan to look at that and with the talent on the team and not call it a complete failure.
100%. Have to agree. I saw somebody called their offense lost in space. Right now, and I mean, well, it's kind of funny, but I mean, really though, you know, that's what I don't know. As far as the firing thing, I mean, it's too early. There's a lot of the season left. If they fix some things and we see some improvement, you know, maybe we all laugh about this stretch. I don't believe that's going to be the case, but there is, as you said, there still is a lot of talent and a lot of experience there for them to, you know, maybe get things on the right track. But I think the lost in space idea is, you know, because right now, if you're watching the offense, you're kind of wondering to yourself, what is speed in space?
Right.
You know, what is it even? I don't understand. Like, what are we seeing on the field that even, you know, they're not, did they even play tempo on Saturday?
I mean, it's a little bit faster, but yeah, it's not.
You know what I mean, though?
Call it tempo, yeah.
Yeah, so just, but as far as firing, it's too early for that conversation. Yeah. Like, a hypothetical, when they're still 4-1, you know, just it's too early for that talk to even like why even address it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay, so all the other questions we got were repeats or, well, used words that or comments that we don't really feel like sharing on air. But let's see. Let's come up with one more question. What can Michigan do next week at Illinois that will change your perception of how the season will go? So what they can't beat Ohio State next week. They can't beat Penn State next week. They can't beat Notre Dame next week. But what can Michigan do to change your, maybe not your mind, because you're not, I mean, we're reporters. We report what we see and what we hear. But is there anything that Michigan can do next week that, not just you, but also maybe the fans or the others, what can be done to change the perception of Michigan right now?
It's put some points up on the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Illinois is, I will say at least Illinois is not Rutgers. They're, you know, again, a game that Michigan should win comfortably, even on the road. But, you know, still, this is more of an opportunity for them, I think, to, against a lesser opponent, to prove some things. So it's just the same old. I mean, we know what the defense, like I said, we're talking here about the defense's confidence is probably at the highest point it's been all season. We're seeing guys emerge on that side of the ball. So it comes fully down to just what we see offensively. And I think the other thing too, let's see them run the football at an elite level.
Yeah.
You know, we keep crapping on the quarterback and, you know, all that stuff, but Michigan's not running the football overly effectively. I do want to say, I think the backs, I think that was like, what, 24, 25 carries for a little over 100 yards on Saturday, which is solid, but again, four returning offensive linemen. I think their backs look talented enough to be performing better and putting up better statistics than they have been. So, I don't know. I guess put some points on the board and then, you know, I say run the football effectively. I think what it really I'm getting at is I'd like to see a dominant performance by the offensive line. I think that would be something that you could build off of, you know, heading into Penn State. You know, much like mm-hmm. what we saw the front four defensively do on Saturday against Iowa, where we felt like, okay, that was a big step for them against a pretty darn good offensive line, particularly on the outside. You know, see if their offensive line can kind of do their part now and dominate an opponent that, in this case, they should dominate. But, you know, let's see, like, some legit domination up front from them, and let's see them run the ball effectively.
Yeah, interesting point about running the ball effectively. Illinois actually is top 40 in the country in run defense
yards
per carry allowed.
Great test.
So that would be, yeah.
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 I didn't know that.
But I'll go a little bit more broad. I'll say that game should be over after one quarter. You know, I'll be out there. If Michigan wants to continue to show that it's progressing mid-season, because it needs to progress mid-season. It wasn't a fluke that they lost 35-14 at Wisconsin. They weren't ready to play. They weren't good enough. And so, you know, we've seen on road games before, you know, I've been at road games where they dinked and dunked around with Indiana or Purdue, you know, going back to 2015 Minnesota. You know, they've looked sluggish at Maryland in 2017. I've seen some of those games before. But the good teams, they take care of business. And I think I'm interested to see, does Michigan, hard to gauge in the game, but do they continue to play with that edge? You know, I wrote the column on Friday, Michigan's laying it down brick by brick. Do they keep adding bricks, or is this the house that they have and they're just going to try it? And so, yeah, I think the only way I think you can really see that is if the game's over after a quarter, because they don't actually need a top 10 offense. They sure would think that they do to beat Ohio State, but you know, teams have made it further with holes, but they need a good offense. They need a better offense than what they have. But maybe if the defense goes out there and just completely dominates Illinois, well, then you might be in business. You might have something still with the team. So to me, it's just about aggregate team domination. You know, we'll talk more about specifics in our preview podcast, but it's Michigan needs a chest pounding win every time it goes on the road, and they really don't have very many of them to draw upon. You know, they've a couple times when they went to Michigan State, going to Rutgers, but as you said, Illinois is bad. They are not Rutgers. It's a different kind of deal. And so yeah. If a fan had asked, you know, what can Michigan show that would change my, you know, kind of what I'm projecting? I think I see the team as an 8-4 team. Well, if they want to be better than 8-4, they will make Illinois look like they're on the wrong field. So, for Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. Check out all of our stories over at themichiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll talk to you later this week as we break down Michigan's next game and take on the Fighting Lions.